Good morning, my friends. It is October 6, 2021. I hope you are having a fantastic morning, or afternoon, or evening, whenever you are listening to this. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. And today we are talking about Squid Game. Squid Game taking the internet by storm, the world by storm, really. Netflix's number one series with a bullet, with about 50,000 bullets, in fact, in the case of Squid Game. Quite a violent show. What I'm going to try to do for you today is point out how derivative Squid Game is. It copies so much of what it does, almost all of what it does, from existing sources. And then I will point out to you also that it does have three redeeming features, and they are very good redeeming features. There is a reason it is number one on Netflix, after all. So those features are pretty important. We will get to them. In some ways, Squid Game reminds me of The Matrix, right? When The Matrix came out back in 99, and everybody ran around saying, oh my gosh, it's so original. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. This idea, these characters, this setting, it's so original. I've never seen anything like this before. Well, maybe if you hadn't seen, like, maybe Dark City that came out just a couple of years before that. Or, you know, any Philip K. Dick story or Metropolis. So it wasn't, you know, the plot or the characters in The Matrix that were original, but there were some great things about The Matrix that were original. Certain techniques, the cinematography, the effects, and the style, right? And I see a lot of that with Squid Game. A lot of that is the same sort of situation here, because the setting, the plot, this battle royale scenario is far from original. In fact, it's all the rage right now over the past decade, decade and a half, 2 decades, right? The Hunger Games, obviously, very similar. Maze Runner, very similar. We had Divergent. We have Fortnite now, the video game, the genre. A video game is even called Battle Royale, right? After the famous Japanese light novel and manga. And I'm sure there was an anime for it, too. It goes further back than that, though, right? This idea of people forced to play a game, right? And where the humans are hunted from the 1920s, you have the most dangerous game, right? So that's going back a century. And then, you know, there's also this Squid Game always, and these Battle Royale games, they always make me think of Roald Dahl and The Man from the South, right around the end of World War II. I think 1948, Dahl published The Man from the South. You might remember The Man from the South from Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and Hitchcock did an amazing job of directing it. It's the one, there are spoilers here, and there are going to be spoilers, by the way, about the Squid Game. Do not listen to this until you have watched Squid Game, or if you don't mind hearing spoilers. So, in The Man from the South, right, it's that episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, if you've seen it on there, where they're betting, and every time you lose the bet, you lose a finger. And then the guy's wife shows up at the end and she says, he really can't be betting with you. I want all of his stuff. And she takes a cigarette lighter and she only has her forefinger and her thumb left. She's already lost her other fingers betting with him. So this always reminds me of that. And of course, Lord of the Flies, right? Where people are thrown into a situation where they have to reinvent civilization from scratch, where they have to come up with their own mores, their own conventions, without benefit of historical inertia lending weight to those institutions. that society needs to function in anything like a civilized manner. By the way, speaking of Lord of the Flies, if you have never read what I consider to be the superior version of Lord of the Flies, you should read it. It's actually Heinlein, Robert Heinlein. He wrote it, well, at least it was published a year after Lord of the Flies came out. And Heinlein's is called Tunnel in the Sky. And it's superior, it's strictly superior, in my opinion. It's co-ed, for one thing, and it covers the return, for another thing, to civilization. So, kind of like how Castaway built on Robinson Crusoe a little bit, Tunnel in the Sky expands upon Lord of the Flies. So I would recommend Tunnel in the Sky to you. All right, let's keep going here. So with Squid Game, yeah, there's a lot of Anthony Trollope here too, right? It was produced with commercial intentions. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it was. Features standard relationships, standard characters, standard values. It really doesn't challenge the viewer whatsoever, right? It's just like Trollope. He's excellent. He executes extremely well. But there's nothing here that's going to push you into a new direction. This is not, as Franz Kafka said, right? Franz Kafka said that a book should be an axe to the frozen sea within us. An axe that shatters the frozen sea within us. Well, you're not getting an axe here with Squid Game. This is just art that's going to say to you, like Anthony Trollope, it's just going to say, yeah, here's what it is. This is what our art of this age and day looks like. And here are the relationships. Here are the characters. Here's the setting. It's pleasant. Enjoy it. This is not so bad. It's not so scary. Here it is in art. You can see it. You can learn from it. And it's okay because that's how things are. It's not going to push you in a new direction. It's just going to recognize how things are. It's just going to reflect that in a comforting way even. And it might sound a little bit odd to call Squid Game comforting, but I think a lot of people are getting a lot of comfort out of it. And I will tell you why when we get to the redeeming features of Squid Game. But let's look at the characters here. First, again, there's nothing original here. We have a gambling addict with a family that he loves, but he can't be a part of because of his addiction. This is a staple of television ever since, you know, after school specials and very special episodes of the network shows. We have a gangster here who's in too deep. We have a golden boy son whose mom thinks he's an angel when really he's illegally trading away other people's life savings and he's being hunted by the police. We have a daughter who only exists to show us something about her dad. All these people are in debt, just like every other millennial you meet on Twitter, and they're all aware of it, and they're all able to speak at length about it and how horrible it is and complain about it, just like every other millennial you meet on Twitter. Yes, I said it. There's the obligatory survivor of a concentration camp, right? The woman from North Korea. There's the obligatory contestant who's dying of a brain tumor. You always have to have one of those in these sorts of things. There's the obligatory Uncle Tom character who cooperates with the oppressive overlords. And he is filling double obligatory roles because he's also filling the obligatory dystopian organ harvester role. These characters are nothing new. These are not original characters. These don't represent novel ideas. You know, if they did, they might not all be in debt like their original copies. But they really don't have any outstanding qualities in addition to their derivative status. There's nothing really in the characters that is going to redeem them. The main character almost has a redeeming story arc, right? Almost. Now, spoilers, like I said. So, spoilers. The story arc of the main character almost takes him from this really annoying, in my opinion, unsympathetic, irresponsible, poor father. He's a gambling addict. And the story arc almost takes him to this point at the end of the story where he's informed. He sees now why gambling is evil, right? Because he's put into a horse race in the Squid Game. The last game in the Squid Game, with besides the actual Squid Game itself, is a race where people are betting on the humans. Just like at the start of the series, Gi-hun, the protagonist here, the main character, he's betting on horses at the start of the series. So sure, that's artistically nice and neat, but that's at a level that we kind of expect these days. Our art has become really, really, really quite good. And that's not enough, this nice, neat tie-in, to really distinguish yourself as a work of art. But the thing is, this story arc for Gi-hun, the main character, it doesn't quite finish off. It doesn't finish off because at the end of the show, he doesn't go to see his daughter. He turns around and he goes back into the game. He's compulsively forced to leave his daughter, forced by his compulsion, I guess, his own neurosis, to leave his daughter, to abandon his family once again, and literally turns away, gets off the plane, and goes back. So his story arc is not from this unsympathetic character at the start to somebody who gets it and somebody who's going to be with his family at the end. His story arc is from this unsympathetic character to what? To somebody who's going to be an Avenger? Somebody who's going to try to take down the Squid Game? His story arc goes from somebody who's a participant to somebody who's trying to end the game. Now, that's a valid story arc, but it is a cheap trick. It is a cheap trick to fake at this one story arc and then pivot to another. And it's just done to play on emotions and to get you feeling for the main character and see, oh, what a cost, what a sacrifice he's making to give up his family and focus on playing the game. But to me, that just makes him unsympathetic. He's a jerk, right? This game is stupid. The people who play it are stupid. And he should go be with his family and actually build something with his life instead of trying to tear down something that is just a trap for jerks. So I don't like it. I don't like that that's his choice. I don't like that they exploited the family to try to make you feel sympathy for the main character. And I don't like that they tried to fake one story arc and then twist it to another. Not too cool, Wang Dong-hyuk. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Creator of Squid Game. Not too cool, Mr. Wang. So there's another idea that's an extremely trite idea, very, very wrong idea that prevails throughout this movie. And the show blurs the lines between money and force. You get the impression in this show that the contestants are seeing, they feel forced into this and that you're supposed to agree with them about this, when in fact they are here completely of their own free will. And offering someone money to do something is completely different than forcing them at the point of a gun, killing them if they don't do it. So I feel like the creators only put words in the mouth of the villains saying, oh, I gave you a choice to be here. It's only the villains who keep drawing this distinction between free will and a contract and wealth and money versus, on the other side, force and guns and bullets and murder. It's only the villains who ever point out that. And I don't know, that sits a little bit uneasy with me. It's possible that they want the viewer to understand that there is a big difference between money and guns, but I feel that most people will take away from this, and most people will see in this show that, oh, offering somebody money is the same thing as forcing somebody to do something. And that's not true at all, right? It's important. Many people have forgotten, but it's important to understand that when you choose to enter something, when you choose to enter into a contract, I should say, for money, that is a free choice. That is your choice, and that is far different than someone pointing a gun at you and saying, I will shoot you if you don't do that. Now, another trite idea that is ridiculous. This one is so trite, it's actually the third rule of art, right? The third rule of art is that anything bad in a work of art must represent capitalism. And that's what's happening here too. They have all over the internet interpreted Squid Game as an attack on capitalism. This is nothing new. It happened with Platform, right? Remember that movie Platform on Netflix, where they had a set amount of food that was placed on a platform and went down through this prison, and the people at the top could eat as much as they want from the platform, and then there was no food at all left by the time it got to the bottom of the prison. And this was compared to capitalism. This is crazy insane. It's not capitalism at all. Remember, capitalism is a system where there is private property and force is removed from the marketplace. Socialism, on the other hand, is a system where there is public control over the means of production. So Platform was the epitome of socialism. It was the antithesis of capitalism. There was no property in there, and force was allowed. People were beating each other up in Platform all the time. There was tons of violence in that prison. And yet, people still, because of the third rule of art, people still complained or still claimed that Platform was an anti-capitalist movie and a vicious takedown of capitalism. Of course, it wasn't about capitalism at all. And that's the same as Squid Game, right? There is no property within the game. They own nothing. The controlling forces, the government, owns everything, makes all the choices for them, gives them knives, sets up fights among them. The controlling forces choose when to turn on the lights, when to turn off the lights, what games they're going to play. This is not capitalism in any respect. There is rampant force, violence, out of control. There are no markets free of force allowed to be established. There's no private property. And yet you see all over the web, you see people saying this is an anti-capitalist TV show, and it points out the evils of capitalism. It's the same thing that happened with Parasite, right? If in Parasite, you look at Parasite, another Korean, obviously, work of art, and in Parasite, in this film, you see that the parasite, the guy, the bad guy, really, is leeching off of other people. And it is not a capitalist issue at all. The issues come from him not having any property of his own and not respecting any property of the people that he is leeching off of. So what is really going on here, right, is that these movies are about class. America sometimes doesn't like to discuss class, at least not in the way that the British will. But it exists, and that's what these movies are about. And maybe people think that capitalism causes class issues, but if you look around the world, it's always been socialism that has degenerated into one party of elites, and then that's the upper class, and then one group that is their friends, and then the rest of the people, the lower class, the controlled commoners, the great nerve-stapled masses. And maybe they're not as nerve-stapled as they are in Squid Game, but they're always lower class than the elites. So unless you get someone to be that Bostrom singleton, right? Nick Bostrom's idea of a singleton AI or a singleton consciousness almost in society, or you have some sort of intermediate AI. Unless you have that, someone must do the deciding in society. Someone must make the decisions in a socialist society and some game where everything is controlled by a central authority. Someone has to make those decisions and make those calls, and that will be your elite class. So when you have a movie that's about class, like Parasite, or a TV show about class, like Squid Game, or a platform about class, when you have something about class, you are going to inevitably be talking more, at least from the historical record, more socialism than capitalism. And yet people ignore that again. It's the third rule of art. No matter what happens in the movie, no matter how close it is to socialism, like in the platform in Squid Game, there is a central authority that controls everything. There is no private property. There is no removal of force from the marketplace. But no matter what, they still blame capitalism. The classes here, of course, right? You have the squares, and then the front man, and then the VIPs. Those make up the tiers of the elites. Those are the government, and then the nerve-stapled masses are the players in the game. And speaking of front man, by the way, this is another pointless, useless piece of the show. The character is lifted, right? The front man has a brother, and this is the good brother, bad brother that is a stock character all the way from Cain and Abel, right? You've got Thor and Loki, you've got James Taggart and Dagny Taggart, you've got Ender and Peter Wiggins. This is a classic, classic trope. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily terrible or even bad, right? Because there are plenty of things where you have stock characters that doesn't doom your show. I just named a bunch of them from classic art, right? And you could point to all kinds of Shakespeare, Merchant of Venice, right? Full of stock characters, Romeo and Juliet. But they're still great. They're still absolutely wonderful. However, here in Squid Game, these two characters, Ino and Junho, they don't amount to anything. I've seen in an interview, the creator of the show, Wang Dong-hyuk, say that he is going to explore that more in the second season, which would be great, because in the first season, this story, this subplot, is completely superfluous to not only the main plot, it doesn't intersect it at all, right? Gi-hun, I don't think, even meets these people. It's not only extraneous to that, but it also doesn't impact any of the themes of the show. Very odd choice. I almost feel like it's just filler to include this cop trying to save his brother, and it's unrelated to the rest of what's going on in Squid Game. So, yeah, those are a lot of reasons that Squid Game left me cold and unmoved. It's derivative. The characters are stock. There are some pointless characters. It seems to be not certain about the line between money and guns. It seems to be not certain about whether it's criticizing capitalism or socialism. But despite all of these flaws, it is still number one with a bullet, as I said. Many, many, many bullets on Netflix. So why? Well, there are indeed three great redeeming features about Squid Game, and they are really, really good. Number one, the players choose to be there. This is the chief feature that has some originality in it. Hunger Games, Battle Royale, those contestants are not choosing to be there, right? Sure, Katniss raises her hand and says, "I volunteer as tribute," but she's only doing that because she's trying to save her sister, who would have otherwise been forced into a situation that she, unlike Katniss, was 1,000,000% unprepared for. Really, Katniss was forced in there, even though she says that famous line. You have the Maze Runner, right? Those kids don't choose to be there. Another dystopian game show like this that often is overlooked in these sorts of discussions is Stephen King's The Long Walk. It's from an earlier era. Of course, he started it, I think, when he was still a student at Maine. I'm pretty sure he started this one before Carrie, even though I think it was published after Carrie. And so in The Long Walk, it's a little bit of an exception, but it's still novel in Squid Game, because in The Long Walk, it's not like the kids and the people in the long walk get to stop and leave and go home and get a second chance and think about it now that they've been in it, now that they've been there. They can't say, maybe I want to do this, maybe I don't want to do this, I've experienced it. No, the Squid Game has this genius moment where at the end of, I think it's episode 2, they all vote to stop the game. Well, they don't all vote, but by a majority of one, and of course it turns out it's the creator of the game to emphasize the fact that he's not forcing anyone to be there. He votes, and he's the deciding vote, and everybody gets to go home. They don't have to be there now that they've seen that people get killed in this game if they don't do well. So they get sent home, and then they get to think about it. And there's this great piece where Squid Game compares life in the modern world to life in this child's game. And where you die if you lose, though. So not entirely a child's game. And everybody chooses to come back, or at least all of the main players choose to come back and participate in the game. That is a novel twist. It's delicious. I like that twist a lot. It's fantastic. This is why we had to wait from 2010. It's already a famous story that this guy, this creator, Wang Dong-hyuk, has been circulating the scripts for over a decade, but nobody bought it. Nobody was willing to buy into it. And then finally Netflix said, oh, we'll take a chance on it. I think that was in 2019. And then Netflix hit the jackpot because in the last 2 years, masks and debt have become pervasive, even endemic, dare I say it, to our society. We've all lost our faces, and that's what makes this game this show so compelling in some respects. We're all used to looking at people now and fearing people without faces now. The other has become vastly more different. It has receded from us. The world has gotten larger over the last 2 years of this pandemic as our personal worlds have shrunk. The outside world has become larger, countering this decades-long trend of the world becoming smaller. Now the world has become bigger. People have receded from us, debt and masks. Everybody's talking about the debt in Squid Game, but nobody's talking about masks, right? And in the real world, people are choosing to wear the masks despite the costs, just like the players in this game are choosing to be there. This is a horror show in a way that no other horror show has been in a long time, right? When you left Jaws, you came out of the theater, you didn't see a sea of giant sharks walking down the sidewalk outside the theater. But when you stop watching Squid Game, and if you dare to go outside onto the sidewalks of Manhattan or wherever you're living, you see a sea of masks and you see a sea of debt, right? And this is where the comfort comes in that I was mentioning before. So people do feel some comfort from watching Squid Game because they're thinking, ooh, yeah, our world is like that world and it's kind of a sucky world now. It's bigger than it used to be. I'm more separate from my neighbor than I used to be. I'm in debt. But you know what? At least I don't get shot at. At least I don't get a bullet in my brain if I lose a kid's game. At least I can still enjoy kids games. At least I can still enjoy Fortnite, right? Squid Game is presenting to us such a horrific scenario that it makes our world look a little bit better. Even though we have debt and masks just like they do in Squid Game, it's still nowhere near as bad as Squid Game. So it's giving us that comfort that maybe we can survive. Maybe we can make it through this because at least we're not that bad. It's kind of like why people watch, you know, reality shows in general, like Super Nanny. I used to see some terrible parents watch shows like Super Nanny, and they would love to watch those shows. And I think it's because it made them feel about their own parenting skills, right? At least they're not a complete train wreck like the families that were in need of the Super Nanny to come in and save them. I think a lot of reality shows, that's how it works. People watch the reality show and they're like, oh man, at least I'm not that bad. At least I'm not like that. And Squid Game is, after all, a show about a reality show. So that's the first thing that's the redeeming factor about Squid Game, is that because the players choose to be there, it's pointing out, just like as we have chosen to wear masks and chosen to take these very painful actions over the last 2 years here, it's pointing out how horrific some of those actions can be, and it's offering a great commentary, not great in the sense of it's a moral good, but just great in the sense of it's important and it's big and it's vast and it's far-reaching commentary on our world. Number two redeeming factor about the Squid Game is, it has to be said that the directing and the acting is really top-notch. It's really good. They do a fantastic job of drawing you into the world. The action is clear. There's never confusion. The characters are consistent. The immersion is almost inescapable when you plunge into this series. The directing also is quite anti-woke. A big theme of wokeness, of course, is that, you know, the body does not matter for gender, but the body does matter for ideas, right? It doesn't matter what biological sex you're born with. You can just choose your gender. But oh gosh, it sure does matter what color your skin is, because that's going to control your ideas about culture and almost all defining higher order thinking skills, right? Or at least the content that you choose to think about is going to be terribly influenced by your skin color, according to the woke regime, according to the woke philosophy. But Squid Game really sort of turns that on its head, right? As far as sex and gender, Squid Game is extremely masculine. The female characters in here are absolutely secondary, and this is quite different than the woke culture that we have been used to seeing in most Western movies over the past 5 years, 10 years, 15 years at least. And even in Hunger Games, right, you had this mixture of feminine and masculine violence. You had in Hunger Games, right, this Alma Coyne style deceptive doublespeak, let me love you while I use you, let's form these little cliques. And in the Hunger Games, your pageantry and your costumes are all as important, almost as important as the violence, and your ability to entertain an audience and to be looked at, and your ability to form dyadic relationships is almost as important as the violence in Hunger Games, but not in Squid Game. Squid Game is just about the bullet to the head. Squid Game is just about the knife to the throat. Squid Game, there's some forming of groups, but it's nothing compared to what you would see in a more feminized version like Hunger Games. So that's the second redeeming feature of Squid Game, is that it is a breath of fresh air. I love Hunger Games. Hunger Games is fantastic, but it is a female protagonist, and female protagonists are everywhere these days. It's hard to find a young adult novel, for example, that is not a female protagonist. And sure, 70% of the fiction market is female, so they're just playing to that, but you have to wonder how much that is a self-fulfilling prophecy, so to speak. Harry Potter, of course, the exception to the rule there. But yeah, in Squid Game, it's like in Bob Seger's Night Moves. When these characters are being used, they know they're being used. It's not tricky. It's not Mean Girls type stuff. All right. And now the big one. Number three. The big redeeming feature of Squid Game, what really sets it apart, is its art style. Its art style is out of the world. It is gorgeous. It is beautiful. And some people would say, oh, that doesn't matter. So what? Who cares about art style? No, it cannot be emphasized enough how much the style impacts the viewing experience. Camille Paglia would love this series, I think, simply for its attention to style, its exquisite and powerful, if cold and brutal beauty. The googly eyes in that larger-than-life doll in the red light, green light game, the brightly colored Dr. Seuss maze that the players walk through before games. That's pointless, that maze, right? Except for it's pointless in terms of the plot, but it has very much an impact on the viewer. It is very much, it very much has a point in terms of the art style and this hallucinogenic, otherworldly, almost mad world that these players find themselves in. This art style is arresting. It is stunning. The glass platforms, the VIP lounge where the naked but painted, I guess, humans, they're just furniture. And the direction, it's very, very wise decision by the director not to give any more attention to these painted naked humans than furniture normally receives in a shot. Super. Super amazing art. And the costumes, oh my gosh, there's a reason that coming up at the end of this month, everybody for Halloween is going to be a Squid Game character. You know, these masks, they resonate with us in a way that, you know, no costume has in a long time. Again, partly because of the pandemic and things that have happened. The circle, triangle, square motif, this is a perfect example of the intrusion of some inscrutable math, some merciless geometry, some quantitative science that might be beyond our reach. It's intruding into our daily lives, looming over us. It provides, but it also threatens to put a bullet through our brains at any moment, right? These circle, triangle, square masks and the way that the players obey them, perfect example of following the science. Don't ask questions, just follow the circle, triangle, square. You know, and then frontman's costume, the only anthropomorphic face or really the only countenance that in any way resembles something human. His costume is also unbelievable. People love it. And of course, he's the only guy who gets a name. He's the only guy whose mask resembles a human. Unfortunately, as I said, he's kind of a squandered character, but that doesn't stop his costume from being to die for. And then the merging of the circle, triangle, square motif into the playground, the actual playing field of the squid, the stylized squid with the circle, triangle, square on it. That's just such a great fusion, right? Of the show's themes, violence and cold authority and the helplessness of a child, all put together in this simplistic, minimalist, stylized, but extremely functional art. I think it's beyond question that the art style is the best thing about this show, and that's not a small compliment. It is fantastic, it is classic, and it is unforgettable. So there you have it. There you have it. That's our review of the Squid Game. It's derivative, it's unoriginal, but it does have three redeeming qualities, namely the voluntary nature of the players, the acting, the directing, and above all, the art style. Is that enough? Is that enough? Well, you know, as I mentioned, Shakespeare's poetry, his character development, his psychological insights, that was enough to overcome plots and settings and characters that were sometimes lifted almost word for word from other sources, right? My favorite's that barge scene in Antony and Cleopatra, basically just copied from Plutarch, word for word. But Shakespeare made it poetry. He added that crucial element of style. So is that style enough to make Squid Game great? Well, I'll tell you, it's certainly enough to make it number one on Netflix. And for now, that is as close to great as we are likely to see. Okay, folks, I will check you tomorrow. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you are enjoying it. This is almost 4 weeks of me doing this podcast. I've been doing this for almost a month now. Hopefully, I'm getting better, but I can't get better without your feedback. So please provide me some feedback. You can find me on Twitter to give me that feedback. You can comment on the podcast, of course. And I will see you tomorrow. Take care.